month? Present you with awards. And
he's on vacation.
Of course.
No respect.
You guys come up here to the front so I can take a photo. Oh,
you're like, get the vacation.
Oh, okay. I didn't say how many years you had here.
Just a couple.
Okay, that's good. That's the way I am.
30 and 25. Wow.
Oh, no. Five.
Wait a minute.
Oh, five.
Oh, that's a typo. I was going to say, you must have started yet. But the agenda said 25.
I'm sorry about
that.
They allowed me to start when I was three.
Pretty young. And how do you make it 25 years?
It's not 25.
Typographical error.
She's 25 years old.
I was going to say, there you go.
5 years. Thank you for your service.
Thank you. Now, picture.
No, yeah. We're still taking pictures.
Okay. Can you move closer to Terry?
Should have wore a suit and tie. I've been married every 30 years, but this kind of weather, I'll take advantage.
Yeah, absolutely.
Terry stops talking.
It's the only time today.
Not enough yet?
Yeah, okay, my turn.
Wait a minute, after politicians stop talking about it.
All right, guys, big smiles. All right, congratulations.
Really, thank you very much.
He starts, yeah.
So is that the criteria for sheriffs? They have to outlive everybody else?
Durability, endurance.
Okay. We have a resolution proclaiming August 7th through 13th, the Master Gardeners Week in Lincoln County. Bill, do you want to read that one?
I would be honored, Mr. Chair, and while I do that, invite our presenters to come forward, please. This is proclaiming August 7th through 13th, 2017, as Master Gardener Week in Lincoln County. Whereas the Oregon State University Extension Service Master Gardener Program was initiated in Oregon in 1976, whereas the OSU Master Gardener Program is an integral and important component of the Oregon State University Extension Service educational efforts throughout the state. And whereas over 549 volunteers have been trained through this outstanding program, and there are currently over 115 active Master Gardeners in Lincoln County. And whereas candidates are granted the title OSU Master Gardener upon successfully completing a required course of training, passing a comprehensive examination, and fulfilling required hours of volunteer service. And whereas environmental education is important to Master Gardeners, and they participate annually in educational outreach programs and currently have over 5 demonstration learning gardens and over 10 ongoing projects in Lincoln County. And whereas Master Gardeners are generous humanitarians who volunteer their time to the protection and beautification of our environment, teaching sustainable gardening practices, and do their part to alleviate hunger in our county through donations of fresh produce to our local food pantries. And whereas Lincoln County commends all of the OSU Master Gardeners for their invaluable contributions to our communities and diligent services to the citizens of and visitors to our county. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners does hereby proclaim August 7th through 13th, 2017, to be Master Gardener Week in Lincoln County and encourages all Lincoln County residents to join in the observance.
Great.
Thank you. And I've given you a copy of our Master Gardener Week events, and I'd like to invite all of you, both the commissioners and the audience, to join us at our events. We have some great lineup at all of our demonstration gardens, and we have an amazing Master Gardener specialist who's going to be presenting on vertical gardening, a new topic, and also grafted vegetables, which are much more productive and will do really well on the coast. So you can even grow tomatoes here. So we're looking big tomatoes.
What is vertical gardening?
Vertical gardening is where you just grow up instead of down, and so it's great for small places, but it's also, you can grow a lot more in a lot less space. So that's a new topic for us, straw bale gardening. We're also going to have a dedication of our adaptive therapeutic garden, which is up at Ocean View Assisted Living, and the Aquinabay Lighthouse Garden, 23rd season, won the International Search for Excellence Award at the International Master Gardener Conference this year. So that's another kudo for our county. A lot of good publicity.
We had a bus tour from the international conference of 33 people who actually not only came to look at the lighthouse garden, but stayed overnight.
In our community. There's also a brochure that I've given to each of you, which is shows you where our gardens are and the highlights for the garden. So we're hoping that during the Master Gardener Week that we will see you at some or all of our events. I think you will learn a lot of things. That's our mission, educational public outreach.
Let me tell you my Master Gardener story. I'm a fisherman who's been rolled around the ocean beat up most of my life, and I don't think of gardeners as particularly tough. But you had, when this Ocean View thing went in, it was cold, it was wet, rainy. Remember how it was this spring it went on? And she was out there working in the rain and the cold and stuff. I felt sorry for her. I mean, I've seen fishermen that were going to go away and blowing 30 miles an hour. She's there building this garden because you had a hidden garden event.
Yes, a secret garden tour.
We were on secret garden tours also. And she had a date to do it. And I'll tell you what, I admired the work she did, not only for the work that she accomplished, but just fortitude to get that job done.
Yeah, it was a big job. It took a couple of years in the making, but it's a beautiful garden space for the residents and the public. They've got a nice pergola now where the residents can go out and sit in the garden, even if they can't garden any longer. But the whole purpose of that garden is to be able to assist those with limited abilities to be able to continue gardening. Pam McElroy is the head coordinator on that garden and has done a phenomenal job. But to respond to you, we are a tough bunch. We don't dress like this all the time. We get pretty dirty.
For you.
Introductions.
I'm Liz Olson. I'm the OSU Lincoln County Extension Master Gardener Coordinator.
And I'm Donna Davis. I'm the current LCMGA president and past president. And I garden in places where people wouldn't think you should be able to garden. As you might have seen out here, alley.
Yeah. None of our gardens, I would consider them to be in ideal conditions. Windy, salty, rainy, you name muddy, all that. But we still have amazing capabilities to grow things, both edibles and ornamentals too. Pollinators is a big thing we're focusing on at all of our gardens this year. And at South Beach, Oregon Coast Community College, we're going to have some buzzing adult bees prancing around in the garden on Tuesday after their demonstration garden. So I would encourage you to check out our gardens, the demonstration gardens. They're pretty phenomenal. And you can learn a lot from them. That's the biggest thing. They are public outreach educational environments. And thank you for the proclamation. We always appreciate it.
Welcome. Clarify the demonstration gardens. Do you have to be a master gardener to garden in the garden?
So some of the gardens are. The one in Yahats is a combination demonstration community garden. The other gardens are specifically master gardener demonstration gardens. So they're not open to the community in order to plant and grow things, but they're definitely always invited to come into the gardens to learn, and we try to have a lot of events throughout the season so that the public can come in and learn. And that's what this Master Gardener Week is, an open invitation to the public to come into our gardens to learn coastal gardening techniques and new techniques.
But the public would be able to access those gardens other times throughout the year? Are they...
The only one that's closed is the Yahats Demonstration Garden, but they do a monthly clinic.
Yeah, they have a month... Well, they have a once-a-month clinic where they open up the garden to the general public on a Sunday, and the Yahats people can come in. It's part of the farmer's market that they have in Yahats, where they invite people over to the garden, which is only about 2.5 blocks from where the farmer's market is, to show them what you can do just a few blocks from the ocean in Yahats with the wind and the salt and the spray. And they have currently what they call a salad cart, where they have tomatoes, which are ripe. They will have lettuce ready. They have radishes. They have carrots, all in this little 4x8 raised bed garden cart.
Amazing.
Yeah. So to clarify, so two of our gardens are at Oregon Coast Community College, Lincoln City Campus and the South Beach Campus. Those are open when the campus is open. Yukon Bay Lighthouse Garden is open when the lighthouse is open. And then Ocean View Assisted Living, they just request, it's open, but they request that you sign in. So really, those are open gardens all the time. It's just the Yahats one because they've had some issues. So they do close that.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Maybe we could ask for a reminder if people are interested in enrolling and becoming Master Gardeners when the classes open and how they find out about that.
The 2018 classes are scheduled already for Tuesdays at Oregon Coast Community College in South Beach Campus. They'll be 9 a.m. to 4:15 p.m. They run January 9th through March 27th. Registration isn't open quite yet. It'll open in October. And so you can call the extension office or you can stop in the extension office, which is a beautiful building. And if you haven't seen it, please come by. Thank you to the county. We are enjoying that building tremendously.
And the Master Gardeners in Lincoln County aren't puppies. Yeah. They work in all kinds of weather.
That's right.
So when you see these other gardeners from around the United States, tell them the challenges that you face trying to prepare
gardening at the coast.
Yeah. Yeah. Gardening at the coast is not the same as
it's a different thing completely.
So thank you very much for the work you do and your group that helped out so much.
And thank you for recognizing the Master Gardener volunteers.
You bet. Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to move that we proclaim August 7th through 13th, 2017, as Master Gardener Week in Lincoln County.
And I'll be happy to second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. So we move down to consent calendar, and consent calendar routine items are things we've heard before, and this is shorter than the ones we've had recently. Still, is there anything you want to highlight or delete?
No, nope, Mr. Chair, I would move for approval of the consent calendar as presented.
I'll second it.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. We move down, then no public hearings, so decision in action. And we have North Lincoln Sanitary. Tina, you want to come up? Tell us what's going on. For those of you who are following on paper, it's not on the agenda, but this is the time she was available.
Commissioners, I apologize. We miscommunicated that. We were looking at two possible dates, the 2nd and the 9th, and we were thinking the 9th, but apparently Tina's not going to be available on the 9th. So what we can do is we'll get the presentation today. We'll bring you back the additional information, and you can formally consider it next week, and then we'll adopt and go forward.
Okay.
Good morning, gentlemen. My name is Tina French. I'm president of North Lincoln Sanitary. This is my husband, Lon, and my business partner. We come before you at least once a year to talk to you about the rate review process and then also use this opportunity to give you what I call the state of the trash address for North County. And so we can start out by, I'm hoping that all of you have seen the rate review at least.
Actually, I think it's circulating around, but they may not have because it wasn't for this meeting. So
okay.
Your timing's perfect. I was going to call you today.
Oh, perfect. Yay, good. So, and as always, interrupt me at any time if you have questions. Our rate review for just a reminder is we give you last year's operations, actual cost of service. We give you what we anticipate next year's budget to be. And then, if necessary, what the rate increase is. And unfortunately, this year we are requesting a rate increase. We like it when we don't have to do that, but this year we fell outside of the operating ratio, so we are requesting a 4.97% increase, which is about a dollar for residential, about $5 for your average commercial customer per month. Last year we had a real small 0.42% CPI increase, so if you average out the 2 years, it's about 2%, which is about what we anticipate it to be when we look forward. We got hit hard, I'm sure, as you know, with insurance premiums going up. We actually adjusted the way we do our benefits for our employees this year. Instead of just a blanket covering everybody where they're at, we put a dollar limit on it, and you get to spend those dollars on a menu of options So that way it was fair for all of our employees and way easier to budget on our end. So whether you're a single person or have five kids, my budget stays the same. So does anybody have any questions before we get into the PowerPoint on the rate review process? And I apologize again, and thank you for accommodating me today. But we'll get right into this, the exciting stuff. So we compare year to year what we're doing with recycling and with garbage, and we are up 2% in our recycling, which is great because I don't recall, maybe you recall last year when I was here, we had just lost GP as our outlet for our wood waste, and we had to start hauling out of state to Longview, Washington, much more stringent specs for what we can haul there. Basically, they want a clean wood chip. No green waste, no leaves, no trimmings, no weeds, no grass clippings. So now what we accept up at the transfer station is clean wood and limbs and so on and so forth. So that we've taken a significant hit. If you look down at the bottom on our wood waste tonnages, I will say that it is leveled out. We're not continuing to see a decline, but we expected to see a pretty major decline.
So let me ask you a question on this. When an average person brings in wood waste to you, is that free at your site?
No, it is not.
What do you charge for that? And what do you charge for the other stuff? It just goes in the dump.
Yep. So our rate at the transfer station is $16 per cubic yard. And wood waste is at a reduced rate of $8 per cubic yard.
And what's an average pickup? That's
two.
An average pickup is two.
Lovely loaded, two to three. Yeah. About 2 yards. A little over two.
So tons sent to the landfill increased by 6% this year. That is almost that increase is almost 100% our Dropbox business. The economy is doing better. People are building houses, remodeling, so on and so forth. So we've seen quite an increase in our Dropbox activity. Participation rate throughout the county continues to be 83% for our recycling, which is terrific. That's better than you see in non-vacation communities. So we're super happy with that. Again, the woody debris program, this is just recapping what I just talked about. We still provide the once-a-week pickup at a reduced rate. We still provide reduced rate drop boxes and 1.5-yard containers for projects so people can recycle that material. In addition to what we accept at the curb in your curbside recycle roll cart, the items in the blue on the left are things that we accept at our recycling center for free. And then things on the right are things that we accept at our recycling center for a charge, and our transfer stations as well. So recycling center in Lincoln City, we have seen an increase in the use of that recycling center, which is a good thing and a bad thing. There's an expense to running that recycling center, and we have our baler for our commercial cardboard program in the bottom of that recycling center. Hopefully all of you have been through there at one point or another. Up above, we have a terrific drive-through system where you can drop off all of the things that we just talked about. But we wanted to know who's using our recycling center and why, because when you have curbside recycling, why are we having so much traffic at the recycling center? And so our daughter's home from college, so we put a little yellow vest on her and sent her out there with a clipboard. And she's collected quite a bit of data. So we found out that about a quarter of the people that are using the recycling center are from North County. And as you know, if you live outside of Lincoln County, you do not contribute as a ratepayer to the solid waste system in Lincoln County. So that was interesting to us. Three quarters of the people are from Lincoln County, so that's great. 71% of the 77 have garbage service, almost 30% don't, which is interesting. Of the people that have service, 58% of them use their recycling at their house, 42% say they don't, which is interesting. And it's... Lexi has comments. I didn't include them in the survey, but people have given her comments when she gets a question. Oh, thank you, Casey. When she gets asked a question, she writes down the comments. And it's everything from I don't like the color of the roll cart, so I don't set it out in front of my house, to you know, I live somewhere. We have a lot of, you know, in our rural people, and like my driveway is a half a mile long. Well, for somebody to load up their roll cart to drive it a half a mile down to the bottom of their driveway for a pickup versus popping into the recycling center, I get that. So, and then we asked the people that either didn't have service or were not from our area, would they be willing to pay a $5 fee? And it was a pretty resounding no. So that's interesting to me as well. And then we wanted to know why they were there. And 26% of them have no garbage service, and that includes the people from outside of Lincoln County. And you can just kind of see that the biggest thing was the glass recycling, which is what we want people to use that for. That is our primary glass depot, which we do not pick up glass at the curb. So that's terrific that people are using it for that. The 16% prefers North Lincoln Sanitary Recycling Center over others would be your North County people because they do, their recycling center has very limited hours. They have to sort of separate their material.
You're saying North County, you mean that's right.
Sorry. Tillamook County.
Oh, right.
So anyhow, and then 12% of them don't want to use their curbside bin for some reason. So at this point, we're gathering data. What we do with this data, I'm not quite sure. But at least, I mean, it's always great to have information. So what we do in the future with this, Lexi continues to go out there each day as soon as she's done with her projects in the office and gather this information. So hopefully by the end of summer, we'll have a pretty good snapshot of who's using the recycling center and why. And then we can start thinking about, you know, I mean, one of the things, and I don't know how it would work logistically, is we put in a gate and all of our customers have a key card and, oh, whoops. I don't know what happened. And if you don't have a key card, then you have to pay a fee to use the recycling center. I don't know. We may just leave it as it is. And thank you very much, Tanya. Speaking of gardening, I think I have a wound. Next. So diversion from other programs.
If I may interrupt.
Yeah.
Which, from a business standpoint, which is more cost effective, to have people using the recycling center or to use the curbside?
Curbside, absolutely, because we already have all the capital, everything is out there already. So, and that's one of the things that I was talking to Lonnie about on the way down here is I said, you know, I love that our recycling center is so centrally located. I like that it's clean, easy to use, so on and so forth. But from a business standpoint, it's like, we want to drive people to the curb. We want them to use their curbside service. So are we doing, you know, kicking ourselves in the back by having this great facility that's easy? But on the other hand, we want the glass, you know, to be convenient to drop off. We want the other items that we don't collect at the curb easy to drop off. So do we, you know, just keep doing what we're doing? Those are questions that I don't really have an answer to yet, but it's very interesting to me to gather the data, and just it's a little bit of a sociology experiment of, you know.
Well, I think if you look at your rate that you're accomplishing in recycling, that's what our goal is. It's a little bit different than your goal. So as a commissioner, I'm looking at what you're actually accomplishing recycling, or not.
Sure, absolutely. And that is our goal, too. Obviously, we need to meet our goals, and so we think about that. But would we meet the same goals if we drove those people to the curb that don't have... I mean, because 26%, well, 30-some percent of the people that are using the recycling center don't have any service. So they're not contributing to the solid waste system in the county, A. And B, I mean, we are getting a little bit of Tillamook County's recycling. They'd probably like those tonnage numbers in their county for their recovery numbers. But, you know, there's a balance there, I guess, of, you know, we don't want to provide something for free to people that is on the backs of the ratepayers. So the ratepayers are paying 100% of those expenses for the recycling center. And if you are allowing people that don't contribute to that system to use that for free, is that really fair to the ratepayers of the county?
That's a question I'll let you deal with.
Yeah. So,
But just to add, follow up on my comment, I know in my case, my driveway isn't quite as long as I understand yours is, but it's probably 100 yards or longer, and it's a big uphill driveway. And the last thing I want to be doing is hauling a recycle bin to the bottom of the driveway. I do that for my garbage or trash. And what I do for recycling is I load up the car and go to the recycling center when I have enough.
Sure.
So just
different
motivations.
And that's fine. It's again, the people that are using it because they have no service at all. And they consider it free. And I mean, we all have been sold a bill of goods back in the 80s that recycling is free, and I think we all are much more educated now and realize that it's not free. And so every ton of recycling that we collect in that recycling center is costing the ratepayers. And so where that balance is of recovery, you know, versus cost, I don't know. And when we have the expense of having the trucks and the roll carts and the employees out there to collect it at the curbside, do we want the increased expense? You know, I don't know the answer to that right now. And it's not a big enough expense that my hair's on fire, but it is something. I mean, it's our job to make sure that we are being fair to our ratepayers, and so it's just one of the things we're looking at.
You reminded me one of the questions I was asked as a graduate in economics at Whitman College. What do they mean by there's no such thing as a free lunch?
Right. diversion from other programs, latex paint recycling, we have been doing that for the last few years and continue to collect latex paint. I will say that I think that one positive thing, as you know, I was not a huge fan of the paint care legislation, but one positive thing I think that has come of that is the education piece of how much paint to buy, because boy, have we seen a decrease in the amount of paint that we take in, which is a good thing and a bad thing. We don't have a lot of paint to sell, and our customers do like the paint, but on the other hand, it's great because it is a bit of a labor nightmare on the operations and the thing for lawn to put together those paint mixes and stuff. So we are looking at other alternatives of bringing the paint that's collected around the state goes to Portland, and Metro mixes that paint. And so I've been in contact with Metro of, hey, what do you think about sending some of that paint down to us? Since everybody's contributing to the fee for you guys to mix it, how about you let Paint Care bring some down to us to have available for our customers? Because that was one of my complaints, is that Lincoln County residents are not going to drive to Portland to buy recycled paint. They should be able to buy recycled paint in Lincoln County. So we're working with Metro to do that, and hopefully we'll have that in place by this fall, unfortunately past the painting season, but ready to go for next painting season. The second item there, unfortunately, after this was published, went away. So Road and Driveway, which is a local outlet for us for asphalt shingles, I'm guessing here, I'm not putting words in their mouth, but I'm assuming since oil prices are so low, they're not really looking for additives for their asphalt. We were able to haul our asphalt shingles to them. They ground them and use them in non-roadway asphalt, driveways, parking lots, and so on and so forth. They don't want that material right now. So hopefully, if the markets change, which we know they will at some point, that program will come back. But right now, asphalt shingles are going to go back to the landfill. Construction and demolition waste, we continue to try to sort drop boxes that are heavy in wood or scrap metal or cardboard, and that is a continuing program.
Dina, doesn't there has to be some kind of a certification on construction material that's asbestos-free or has to be treated differently?
So there's new rules that are actually going through the DEQ process right now, and we've been very involved in those. There's nothing So there are existing rules, but DEQ is looking at making it much more stringent. It used to be anything that you generated as a homeowner and was less than 3 yards, I believe you could...
It's less than 1% of the total waste.
Anyhow, there were separate rules for that versus commercial generation, and now the whole thing has been thrown up in the air, and we're trying to... come out with new rules that and figure out where we fall in that hierarchy. So What we don't want is we don't want to be the asbestos police at our transfer stations, and we want to protect our employees. So you do have to have asbestos done if you are demolishing a building. If you have asbestos, and you need to have your building tested if you want to demolish it or do significant remodeling to it. So there are certain ways to handle friable asbestos, is asbestos that is fluffy insulation, and then non-friable is the solid stuff, tile, pipes, so on and so forth. So there is new rules coming out, and we have the county haulers, we are all very apprised of what's going on and just kind of waiting to come out with a program that will be countywide so everybody's on the same page. We can educate the entire county, the planning departments throughout the county, and so on and so forth, as so when a resident or a business comes in for demolition permits, et cetera, they know what to do.
So what about lead?
Lead, I have not heard any changes on.
Okay.
I think we're still... I apologize if that's a city rate increase. That should say county. The rates are correct. But that is your rate increase that we talked about earlier. So just about a dollar for a 32-gallon can picked up once a week, and about $5, $6 for a yard-and-a-half container dumped once a week. That's the county rates. Compactors and drop boxes are going up equally. One thing that I did want to point out, as you look through your rate review packet, there is a full rate sheet in there, which is about 4 pages long, of all the different rates we offer. Lon and I did go into our larger quantity generator rates, so five-time-a-week customers with containers, and tried to make that, tried to start getting them to where they make sense, i.e., if you have a one-yard container picked up 5 days a week, that should be more expensive than a five-yard container picked up once a week. And I'm a little embarrassed to say that I think our rate base was from in the 60s when my dad bought the business, and capital was a bigger issue than labor. And so he would rather have one container out there picked up several days a week than multiple containers picked up once a week. Well, boy, how things have changed. Containers are cheap compared to labor. And so we want those rates to make sense for our ratepayers. The Lincoln County Solid Waste District has the Solid Waste Advisory Committee, which I've sat on for way too many years. But I continue to be involved with that. And I would say the most significant thing we've done in the last 10 years is we've hired a contractor to update the Solid Waste Management Plan. It's Bell & Associates that did the Solid Waste Management Plan in 2004, so it's great to have them back for the history there. And we had our first kickoff meeting last month, and he went away with the things that we gave him, and we'll be coming back this month to go over that. The two things that I would say are, well, the one thing I would say that is the biggest difference is Senate Bill 263, which is part of the 2050 visioning for the state of Oregon. This is a DEQ bill that deals directly with solid waste. The two things that really affect Lincoln County are the contamination reduction plan, which I'm happy to tell you we have been doing since we started curbside recycling. I think we have one of the most robust contamination reduction plans in the state. I went to the DEQ meetings, and it's like, we've been doing this for a long time. Why are we talking about it now? And it's one of the things that came out of their committees for the 2050 visioning. But we have cameras in our hoppers. We hand inspect, because we allow our customers to bungee their lids on their roll carts because of the weather here on the coast. So when we flip those lids, we visually inspect them. We have cameras as they're being tipped. And if there's contamination in your recycling, you're going to get a letter that tells you what it is, to please clean it up. Call us. We'll come back and get it. And then if you don't, you get three of those letters, and the third one says, we're sorry, you don't seem to understand what goes in your recycling, so we're taking it away. And if you want it back, you can come and take a test to prove to us that you care about what goes in your recycling and it's not just an extra garbage can, which people do. So that's great.
What are some of the biggest contaminants?
Plastic bags, glass, and styrofoam.
styrofoam has to go to the landfill.
Yes. Unfortunately, people seem to think that if there's a recycle symbol on it, it can go in the recycling. And sometimes they think that if they want it recycled, it goes in the recycling, like a garden hose, for instance.
Well, I guess in theory, all three of those items would go to the landfill.
Yes.
Since they're not recycled.
Well, glass, we accept at the depot. But plastic bags and styrofoam are landfill items. Plastic bags can go back to the grocery stores that accept them.
Yeah.
The other thing that's changed in Senate Bill 263 is the goals for Lincoln County. There used to be teeth. If you did not meet your goals under the old plan, there were teeth that you had to add new programs. These goals are increased, but it's more of a, oh, geez, wouldn't it be nice if everybody met these goals? That way the state can meet their goals. So there's no teeth in these goals, but they are a goal. And so currently our rate is at 30.8, and that is a reduction because under these new rules we lost our 2% credits. We had a 2% credit for backyard composting program, which we continue to do. And we also had a 2% credit for, I can't remember what the other one was. But we lost both of those. So that was 4% right off the bat that we lost. And then with the reduction in the wood from around the county, we've seen a dip in that. So whether we want to start a new program to get to the 35% or just, you know, continue to do what we're doing and see if we can increase things, that's one of the things we'll be discussing at the Solid Waste Advisory Committee. Product stewardship is part of Senate Bill 263. The things on the left are things that have product stewardship programs that we collect separately. The things on the right are things that are possibly coming up, and I think these things were on the list last year, I reminded you of. Carpet continues to be on the list. I continue to ask DEQ representatives why it's on there. The only thing that they will tell you is that it's difficult to dispose of. And I don't know why they think carpet is difficult to dispose of, but it's not difficult to dispose of. The only recycle market for carpet is in Atlanta, Georgia. So that makes it pretty out of reach for us. So why that's on there, I don't know if it's a lobby from the carpet industry. I don't know. I continue to get blank stares and shrugged shoulders when I ask about that. Pharmaceuticals, I will say, is on the radar. There's a big lawsuit in California right now between Big Pharma and I don't know if it's a specific county or an association of counties in California. Oregon is kind of sitting back waiting to see what happens with that, what kind of program comes out of California, and then I think we'll probably take that and form our own program. So those are the items that recovery goals for high-impact materials at the bottom of the slide. Again, carpet. Plastics and food, I think, are more serious and obviously have better programs around the state for those items. So we'll see. The plastics one right now is completely dependent on China, and as is most recycling markets, other than fiber. 70% of our fiber in Oregon stays in Oregon or the Pacific Northwest, so that market is great for us. The rest of it goes overseas.
Where are we relative to those goals?
I don't have specific numbers. I can get those to you for ours, and you have them in your opportunity to recycle report if you want to look at them, but I can also shoot them to you. And those are state goals.
In terms of the carpet, plastic, and food?
Yeah.
Well, so because we mix everything, we don't have separate numbers for, like, plastics. We have a number for mixed recycling, which would include all that stuff. And then they do waste audits, and from the, you know, we know what those numbers are coming out of material recovery facility where we send it to, but then that would be everybody's number. It would be their whole facility number. But we're not that far off, though.
All right.
So we could, you know, we can get you that number, but it would not be specific to our place. We don't do food currently, and we don't recycle carpet. So.
There's no carpet. I don't think there's anybody in the state doing a carpet program right now.
So is that stuff called the landfill?
Yes.
All right, where else would it go? Yes.
Right. recycle markets, we talk about this every year, and it is crazy, but currently we are getting paid for recycling, so that's a positive. In March, we were paying to get rid of recycling, so from month to month, it changes drastically. And so we just kind of, you know, anymore, it's like, oh, that's what it is. We used to get kind of excited about it if it went down significantly and think, oh my goodness, what are we going to do? But now we just kind of wait and see what it's going to be next month. And we don't really count on that revenue. If we get some revenue, terrific. It helps offset the cost. But if we don't, we don't get too excited. It doesn't usually last too long. We are updating our website. That's a snapshot of what our new front page will look like. We're trying to make our website more interactive for our customers, just as a customer service and outreach, to where if you want to order service, you can any time of the day. You don't have to wait to call during business hours or leave a message with us and hope that, you know, it got done. If you want to order on-call pickup, order a container, whatever, you'll be able to do that on the website and then have much more quick information at your fingertips instead of having to call us. And a little blurb there on the left-hand side, our household hazardous waste event is in North County this year. It's August 12th from 10 to 2. And so that's our event coming up soon. And the other big event that is right after our household hazardous waste is the eclipse. We're asking all Monday customers to place their cans out on Sunday night. We'll be running our routes early, getting our trucks off of the road as early as possible, and have a full force plus some. We're hiring some temporary workers to be shaggers on trucks so we can, you know, pick up as much as we can, as quickly as we can. We'll be emptying all of our trailers, all of our trucks, everything on Saturday, so that come Monday we have as much capacity as possible, because I don't think we'll be able to make it to the landfill on Monday. We go to McMinnville, and Lonnie seems to think maybe we'll get one load out. I'm doubtful of that, but I think we have plenty of capacity at our transfer stations, our trailers, and our trucks to hold off until Tuesday, and then we'll hit the ground running hard on Tuesday with our public works departments and stuff to get things cleaned up as quickly as possible.
So just to clarify, you feel you'll be able to get out and do trash pickup early Monday morning, the morning of the eclipse?
Yes. Okay. Yes, we are running all of our routes as normal, the best we can. Thank you. I just don't think it's fair to our customers. There's too many. We have too many commercial businesses that to make the. It's hard enough on a regular weekend to go from Friday to Monday, because most of them have Friday Monday pickups, and to ask them to skip that, I think, is unfortunate. So we're not going to do it.
Anything can happen.
Yep.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Great.
Thank you.
Have a great day. Thanks for the tissue.
So this comes back then. There's public comment or anything
right,
they can
next
make
week,
during
we'll
the next
take
week.
That next week, and then we'll get an order that just rates if that's what your desire is, and we'll do that.
Okay. Move down to discussion and information. County Commons Master Plan Update. Wayne.
Commissioners, I have for you in your packets an update on where we are with the Master Plan refinement. And I won't spend a lot of time talking about that. But just to let you know, we're using the firm of Cogan, Owens, and Green with a number of sub-consultants to do the work on the final places, our final phases of planning for the redevelopment of the Commons. And this particular process really is a culmination of many years of public efforts that we've made for that particular site. It includes a number of planning efforts that we've already undertaken, and I've identified those in the report, a number of public outreach events, but this will be kind of the final phases of doing that. The important difference that we have now than when we started some of those other processes is that we have really put together some of the financial side of the equation to allow us to actually do planning with resources in place. And really focus now on some of the operational business plan aspects of redevelopment of the property. And then the kind of ancillary facilities that will go along with the current plan to build, take down the exhibit hall and rebuild another facility on that particular site is kind of a central feature. I do want you to know that we have been doing reports to other stakeholders. I did a report to the Newport Urban Renewal Council and the City Council in Newport. They designated a person to be on our visioning committee or our stakeholder committee. And we also gave a report to the city of Lincoln City and asked them to appoint a representative. We'll be seeking others to be on the committee. And I wanted to note that there's the firm that's doing this proposed a very robust public outreach and stakeholder involvement strategy. We'll be doing that over the course of the next number of months. And so there'll be great opportunities for folks to come back in and looking at a vision for that particular property that fits with the desires of the community out there. And I did note, as I've been talking about, even though the city of Newport, because they've included actually some funding strategies in their urban renewal plan, and actually will be a partner in some of the redevelopment of that particular area out there, that this is a county-wide plan, and we're really seeking input from the entire county. And so with that, unless there's any questions, I've given a preliminary schedule that's attached, and we'll continue to do both periodic updates to the board and to the fair board, and again, we'll do a lot of announcements about the public outreach and stakeholder engagement out here to get folks involved.
Mr. Chair, a question.
Go ahead.
Council Belmont, how involved is the school district? I know they've reached out to me several times.
They were very involved. Unfortunately, the change in leadership. In fact, I'd actually talked to the former superintendent about, and we have had, actually Mr. Bologna has been involved in some of the processes before. They will actually have a representative. They're one of the key stakeholders, especially because of the proximity of the Newport schools to the actual grounds there. So they'll be a very key player in this whole process here. I have not at this point made contact with the interim superintendent, although I do know him pretty well, and we'll be doing that in terms of engaging him into the process.
Well, my understanding was under the former superintendent that Rich Bologna was
their designee.
Was their designee.
Yeah.
Second comment I'd make is that I think there's certainly some potential. There may be design limitations, but I think there's certainly potential to have that be a center for a variety of athletic tournaments, and which of course would bring large numbers of people to the county.
And the Fair Board has heard some of those presentations, had some people, we've identified some people that kind of represent some of those interests that will also engage as potential stakeholders. And again, there'll be a very robust public comment opportunity for people to bring that in.
Okay.
We move down to request for legalization of Ocean View Drive from the center line of 4th Street, center line to the, 4th Street, southerly and easterly to the westerly right-of-way line of Pontiac Street and Yahats. You got me fouled up with all the east and west and south. I'm like, holy.
Where's the map?
John Waffen, Schmidt County Surveyor. The area we're looking at here is immediately north of the river in the city of Yahats. So it extends from the river up to 4th Street on the west side of the city against the ocean. Basically, what we're looking at here is
Ocean View Drive. I'll let Public Works Director Kenyon describe Ocean View Drive and their activities there.
Roy Kenyon, Lincoln County Public Works Director. What we're looking at is legalization of basically the southwest end of Ocean View. Ocean View actually travels further to the north and then intersects with Marine Drive that runs east and west and connects back into Highway 101. And Ocean View actually also connects on the south end to 101, so it's a loop. The right-of-way as it exists now on Marine Drive and Ocean View down to 4th Street actually is correct. The road falls within the right-of-way. There aren't any issues there. From 4th Street south, we have various issues where the right-of-way does not conform to the road as traveled. And so this would be the process to rectify the situation, realign the right-of-way so that the road falls within it. Ultimately, the goal here is to then work a deal with the city of Yahats for a jurisdictional transfer of the entire loop, Marine Drive and Ocean View.
Questions?
Just to clarify, these are going to be...
directionally, this is going to be confusing. But the south end of the road that we're trying to legalize, is that on the north bank of the Yahats River?
Yes.
And is there not a state park at that location also?
So, Commissioner, you're up.
Go ahead. I didn't mean the question to be so difficult. It took two of you.
Sorry. Yes, the state park starts around here and traverses up to through 2nd Street area and on up to 3rd Street. So this is essentially where the state park parking area is. You can see these two parking areas that the state park utilizes. Their restroom facility is here and additional parking along here.
And so what, our right-of-way goes through the state park?
Commissioner, the right-of-ways for Ocean View Drive were created with the original plats of this area of Yahats. That's one of the reasons why the road doesn't necessarily conform with the right-of-way as generated by the plats. These plats were in the early part of the 1900s, and so that's where the county's right for the road was created, was in the original subdivision plats. So yes, the state park has jurisdiction through that area, but the county road traverses through the state park.
Okay.
So the road came first.
Okay.
Seems pretty straightforward to me, and this is something I know we've been working on, you know, as part of the larger project for decades, so I don't have any problem with moving this forward.
And again, the idea is once this process is completed, then jurisdiction will be turned over to the city, or...
That's basically our hope. We've had multiple conversations with City of Yahats and their council and their mayor, which it's been such a long drawn out process, those positions continue to change, but overall their feeling has not changed. They would like to basically have the jurisdiction over that loop. It's not your typical county road. It's not a farm to market type road. It's basically a 25 mile an hour road that services nothing but residents at this point in time, and so it really doesn't fit into our mold as far as county roads go. And you know, we are, because of multiple reasons, one financial, we are trying to downsize our maintenance area, and this would be another small step in that direction. There are a few things that have to be done to the road. There's a section 4th Street down to the state park is in dire need of some work, and we've been kind of putting off that maintenance work until we know exactly how the whole thing is going to proceed. And there's other issues there. There's midden problems where you're really kind of confined on what you can do maintenance-wise, what you can do as far as widening. And so we still have a few things to work out, but ultimately the goal is to legalize the road, reach an agreement with the City of Yahats, do the necessary improvements to the road, and then transfer it.
Okay.
I don't have any problems. So
let's move it forward.
And I've prepared a draft order. We'll put this on the calendar next week for adoption.
Okay,
transitional, thanks. Transitional housing. Purchase the community. Are you ready?
Yes. I
am. You identify yourself?
Yes.
Good morning. I'm Susie Gonzalez. I'm the Community Justice Director here in Lincoln County. I'm here this morning regarding the purchasing of a home for the purposes of housing up to 6 female offenders in that home, and we're interested in and actually have identified the purchase of a home.
Could you pull the mic a little closer?
Have you heard everything so far?
Yeah, but it was definitely weaker.
Okay. Anyway, this is the home that we're looking at would be paid for out of existing funding that was carryover funding from our original Justice Reinvestment Grant from the state. And we had, because of the late opening of our original transitional housing units, we had a $243,000 carryover from that original grant. The proposal would be to pay for the home with that money, because it is pretty much the same for the same purpose as the original grant. So I have identified a home and placed a made an offer on the home. So basically, this home is going to be similar to our MAIL program, what we call TAPS, which is Transition and Programming Services. And these are for offenders who are getting out of prison and out of our local jail after having served part of their sentence, and they're getting out early based on some recent legislation that allows for offenders to release to the community earlier. So we currently have the TAPS program, which has built-in programs, which we continue to develop and gather more and more. And these the offenders would not be housed there as the males are. They would be housed separately in this home. However, the services that we provide would be open for female and male offenders within our TAPS unit right now. So
do you have anybody living in that piece of property you're looking at, Mike?
This is a home that is a an individual who is selling it. It would be an outright sale. We would not have to relocate anyone.
What's the cost of the remodel? You anticipate? You know, you can't give it to me accurately now, of course, but
frankly, I don't anticipate much of a remodel at all.
It's in good shape.
It is in very good shape. We've had
it's designed to fit your.
It is.
Because
yes.
Transitional housing is much different than normal housing.
Transitional housing, for this purpose, all we are providing at that location will be housing itself. The programs will be conducted and performed in our existing transition center. So the computer
In distance
access
from the transition center, does it require transportation or anything?
No. That's the beauty of it all, because that's why I quickly placed an offer on this home as soon as it was located, because of the fact that it is so close. It's maybe 4 to 5 walking blocks from here, and our transition primary transition centers, our center is right 3 blocks from here.
Okay, then NIMBY is always the not my backyard syndrome is always the biggest problem with these kinds of things. Is there close residence to it, and if the residents have any idea this might happen?
Yes. There are a few homes that are located nearby. Jennifer Landers, supervising probation officer, and I have done some outreach, have talked to some neighbors and who are fully supportive of it. Again, we're talking female offenders and up to 6, so we're not talking about big, scary people, really. These are primarily lower-risk individuals to begin with.
You say primarily, clarify that.
Meaning they're, well, I mean, it depends on how you classify low risk. To us, they are low risk. To a civilian, they may not feel they're low risk, but these are property offenders or typically drug-related offenses that they're serving time for.
Drug-related offenses can manifest in all kinds of ways.
Well, it depends, yeah, but typically, they're drug-related and or property crime. So the drug-related often is underlying property crimes. Yeah.
Property crimes to feed the habit, essentially.
Essentially, that's for the most part, that's what we're going to look at.
Go ahead.
Yeah, just some additional information if I could share with the board that since I am the board representative on the local Public Safety Coordinating Council, this proposal was presented to the LPSC on Friday and was supported by the LPSC. There were a couple of other proposals for the carryover funding, which were worthy proposals. One to beef up staffing at the Children's Advocacy Center, the other to do some physical repairs to the shelter of my sister's place. But again, the underlying reason for this legislation being passed by the legislature, the original legislation, 2013, Susie, am I correct, I think?
13, yes.
Yeah,
13.
Was to reduce the flow of people from the counties into the state prison system to stop the need for, or at least, well, they'll never stop, but at least significantly slow the need for expansion of the state prison system. And unfortunately, Lincoln County is right now one of the few counties that is sending more people to the prison system rather than fewer in that time period. So hopefully this will be, you know, following the footsteps of the TAPS programming, which I know has just gotten started, but already is showing really good success. And so I'm very enthusiastic on this.
I've got to ask you a question when I hear that number, because Lincoln County services way more than just county residents.
You're right.
Do we have any statistics to show that residents that are the numbers going up, or is it because we're handling so much more people from the tourist industry?
These rates are ongoing throughout many years, so although directly responding to you, I don't know, I don't personally have whether or not they're primarily, I'm pretty sure, but I don't have the statistics to back that most of them are Lincoln County residents. The thing is about them releasing back to us, that's one of the screening tools that we look at, and where they are released to has to do with the county of residence, as well as the county of their crime. So when they committed the offense in Lincoln County and lived in Clackamas County, for example, if they have established residency and so forth, there is a possibility that they wouldn't come to us anyway. So.
Well, I have a couple of questions. I believe the male transitional housing can accommodate up to 14?
22.
Just trying to get a perspective on the size of the different operations. And again, the female housing would just be housing, and then the programs would take place at the male.
Right.
Same location as the male housing.
Yes, and because right now females can participate in programming there, so this only provides a housing piece to otherwise who more often than not would be homeless, returning back to no place to live.
And then correct me, but I believe the community or the Justice Reinvestment Act actually had a limitation or a guideline as far as the amount of money that could be spent outside of the effort to reduce the...
Well, there was a minimum of 10% for victim services. Some right. Counties have gone slightly over that, right? You said maybe 12, 13%.
Right.
If my memory serves me, there was the discussion about these other possible uses of the money would have pushed that far above the 10% guideline.
Yes, it would have, and I think that was part of the consideration that most of the LIPSIT members took into consideration prior to.
I think it's a sound decision.
Wayne, would you take a second to explain to us why we have to move fast on these kinds of things? Or would you?
Well, obviously, anybody who deals with real estate, especially in as hot a market as Lincoln County is, knows that unfortunately these opportunities come up and then they're gone very quickly. So in this particular case, this opportunity came up. We had discussions with the property owner in terms of doing timing. Our preference really would be have a little bit more time between the time we look at the property and the time we actually close and make decisions on it. We actually negotiated an extension on the time frame that this property owner was looking at. But you know, if you, it's sort of that unfortunate situation that if you snooze, you lose, and that makes it very difficult for public entities when we're out here trying to compete on the open market to find facilities or in this case, a house that meets our needs. So our time frame here is, I mean, that's why Susie's been doing her outreach right now. We tried to get that out there, and we'll continue to do outreach until you make final decisions, so that if anybody has questions or concerns, they can express those to you. But the way this would work is, and we make a contingent, obviously any offer we make is contingent on the Board of Commissioners deciding to go forward with it. You could decide not to go forward with it. in which case we just drop the offer and it goes, you know, from there. So we've built those kinds of contingencies into the offer, and we'd be looking to come back to you next week because of the time frame here to take any more input you want to take and then try and make a decision.
I have another question, either of you can answer this one, and it relates to the financing. The initial purchase value is coming from the state funds, but our general fund then, what's our obligation in the future from the general fund?
You want me to?
Go ahead.
Okay. So first of all, the amount of carryover isn't going to quite meet the price of the home, and so the rest of that balance and whatever.
Is what, approximately?
Seven or eight thousand.
Okay.
And that would be picked up by my department in carryover supervision fee money, which I still have some. If you recall, the original purchase of the two TAPS unit, the current transition housing units, were purchased out of supervision fee money that had been accumulated over the years. There is still money, and we have since accumulated more money in supervision fees. So we would pick up the balance based on supervision fees. So those are offenders paying for that balance, and also some of the remodel if there is some need for some.
Will come from that fund.
Yes.
So that general fund obligation is virtually none.
Well, obviously, whenever ongoing maintenance kinds of issues, you know, anytime we take anything county inventory of properties, that requires maintenance and upkeep and those kinds of things. And just so that you know, we did get actually there was a full inspection on this particular house. They shared the inspection with us. It was a kind of a punch list of things that they needed to take care of, which they will take care of. And our facilities manager has looked at the property there, and you know. So
did he have any significant concerns?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my question.
Yeah.
Because we did put a new maintenance some people in the fund to do it. So this will are people we've already hired. So it's no new expense to it, unless it's some particular maintenance problem. No.
But anytime, obviously, we add.
Yeah,
at least the portfolio and whatever manner we do that, that becomes part of the things we have to deal with.
The other piece is operationally, it would be
that
picked
would be
up.
My question.
Yeah, it will be picked up through this ongoing grant. So we will be, every 2 years we put in for the grant. This year it's slight, our percentage is slightly higher, and it was approved at the state legislature. So
now the question is, of course, with the state legislature, you can't obligate into the future. So is this vulnerable then in the next session?
No, it would not be, and I'll tell you why. Because the building will be purchased. It'll be done and a one-time thing. So it's the ongoing cost will be very minimal. It'll be cost of electricity and a few other things. So.
But in terms of programming, you may be thinking, Mr. Chair, you're right. I mean, the legislature cannot obligate beyond the two-year period of the biennium. But I think a couple of things in favor of expecting this commitment to continue over the long term. You know, this initial Justice Reinvestment Act came out of a pretty comprehensive study by the governor, the legislature, evaluating the growth. I think it was from 2000 to 2012. The corrections budget in the state had gone up by 50% in that time, and they said, you know, this is absolutely not sustainable. So when they passed the bill, I mean, they put in language a commitment, you know, again, it can't be fully legally binding, but that saying that this would at least be a 10-year program. And also, I think, you know, one good sign of the legislature's commitment and that they're seeing results in a lot of the state already with these programs is, you know, despite a very tight budget climate, not only did Justice Reinvestment initially get refunded at current levels, but at the very end, I think there was a bill that I think put about $7 million in supplemental funding in. So we're going to actually see our programming money go up in the next biennium, one of the very few places.
And also part of that supporting thoughts, I believe, or philosophy with the legislature is we were one of the very few agencies that were actually fully funded and at an increased level based on our population throughout the state. And we were fully funded for operations.
So Wayne, we disagree to this at this point? What's how we do this?
We'll actually bring you back an order next week. That would proceed, authorize the county to purchase this property and then go forward with the necessary steps to close on the purchase. The closing won't occur that quickly, but it does occur fairly quickly out there. So you'll have an opportunity for folks to give us input next week if there's anyone that wants to give us input. But we'll have an order prepared for you if you're prepared to take action to authorize the purchase and move forward.
As long as there's an opportunity for public input next week, I think that's important.
And Susie will continue her efforts, the outreach efforts in the neighborhood,
I guess I'd like an update on that next week.
Yeah, and Jennifer Landers, the supervising probation officer, and I are working in tandem on this, and she probably will be doing the presenting next week, let you know. The other thing I wanted to just talk about, we did go out and we did talk to some neighbors. They were all supportive. For those that we didn't, there's only like four houses.
It's on the end of a dead end
it
street,
is
right?
And there's a ravine on one side, Thompson Sanitation, the old building is vacant, and that's on the front side of it. So there's only, you know, a couple of houses on that block. We left flyers on the ones that we were not able to contact anybody, but for those folks that we were able to talk with somebody thus far, very supportive. So,
So not to belabor the funding, but operationally, what type of a financial commitment is that? I understand, you know, buying the building's a one-time expense, but the operations are ongoing. What type of dollar amounts, is there sufficient revenue in your budget to support that ongoing, for a reasonable period into the future?
Well, first and foremost, the Justice Reinvestment Grant, the new one, is, in fact, the old one as well, is for the operational sustainability of these programs.
That grant goes away, though.
Okay, so this next biennium, 17-19, it has been fully funded,
right,
like Wayne had brought up.
Increase.
However, I will say that beyond that date, I believe that it would be easy to sustain, at least this home that we're talking about right now. Yeah, because what we're talking about is it's a home, and so we're talking about maybe a little bit of an increase in the average electricity costs or something like that. But
from an operational standpoint, you've already got the program, and you could have 21 males, and adding 6 females is
right.
Percentage-wise, relatively small.
Okay.
So, okay.
Let's make the decision.
Well, I'm concerned about the financial aspects, right, so that's why I'm asking my question.
I don't see any issue with operational sustainability.
Okay. Thank you.
That's the same question I asked, too.
Yeah, it's the different.
Okay. I mean, worst-case scenario, the programming money goes away entirely, but it could still be a supervised transitional living house without...
Right.
Yeah.
And I think one thing to note is I think we're going to have this population whether the funding's there or not. That's
yes.
our responsibility. That's
yeah.
in the agreement between the state and the counties,
yeah.
you know, for doing
yeah.
that. This is population we have to deal with.
Yep.
Right.
Okay. I'm in favor of moving forward, Mr. Chair.
Good. Okay. Then we'll put this back on your decision and action, but make sure we receive public comment before we take any action next week.
Okay.
Thank you.
We move down to reports, I guess. This is the next one. Yeah, I move down to reports.
I'm sure you have a report on stepping up. That I think it's first before you give your reports.
I see. Okay.
That's the nice way to
share it. Right on the page here, other Sparks. Okay, if I could introduce this. This is going to be a three-part presentation, and everybody is going to try and move through their information briskly, but provide the opportunity for your questions and comments afterwards. Steve Sparks has been working with me and our county team for the last year as a consultant on the Stepping Up project. Steve is going to have just a couple, 3 minutes, 4 minutes of introductory comments. He's got a few slides, then I've got some slides to update you and the public on our progress, and then I've asked Sheriff Landers if he could close out the presentation with his comments and perspectives, and so if both you gentlemen are ready, I will let Steve lead us off.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I have a personal comment. At the prime age of 71, I feel blessed to be here to do the work involved with this project that's I have a lot of passion about, and also the work is very consistent with my own career experience and education. It requires some skill sets that we don't really have in Lincoln County. It's very, very strategic. So what I'm going to do is talk about some of the business challenges that we have with respect to stepping up. And I have to say that Susie Gonzalez is a nice segue to this update and what is happening in the community justice organization, community corrections, is very critical to the success of the Stepping Up initiative. Now, I use the word disruptive and because this is a little bit disruptive. That's why it works so well if I'm working, and thank you, Sheriff, for your leadership as well in this, because without the sheriff and without the commissioners, none of this would be happening right now, because that very first step in the Stepping Up initiative is the leadership commitment, which has been all the way through here, and it's made my job 100% easier. So thank you for that. So we have been a little disruptive, but well received for the most part. I've had a lot of fun. This has been very energizing, working on this project. So this is, I don't want to be make this sound easy, because this is a major business transformational challenge that we have on our hands. But it's very doable, and we're heading in the right direction. Now, if you look at that chart and digest it a little bit, this is kind of how it looked to us in August of 2016 when Commissioner Hall and the rest of the board asked me to come in and help out. Now, that kind of a chart for me is very comfortable, because that's how I've spent almost 50 years of my career working in an environment that has a lot of chaos, and an environment that we need to sort out. So what we want to talk about, what we started talking about back then, is where do we go from here? How do we sort all this out? How do we make sense out of the chaos that's connected with our complex business environment that we have, not only in Lincoln County, but in our Tri-County with respect to the IHNCCO, Samaritan Health Services? It goes all the way to the Oregon Health Authority and the legislature and on to Washington, D.C., with the federal criminal justice system and health care and Medicare and the whole thing. And here's what it looked like after about 6 months. We kind of got ourselves organized around the business landscape of Lincoln County and our Tri-County. And I'll have to say that I had a lot of help sorting this out, both the excellent direction from Commissioner Hall and the teamwork that we've had here in the county, as well as from the Sheriff's Office. And since we were talking about it, I want to say that our Tri-County partners have been excellent. And one name in particular, because he just retired and we're going to miss him, that came, he drove over, Frank Moore drove over here practically the first day I was on the job and met with the two of us, we had a meeting, and immediately Frank Moore became my mentor in terms of trying to translate what we were doing in this chaotic environment with respect to behavioral health, jail diversion, jail reentry transition, our relationship with the IHNCCO, and all those categories and subsets of the environment that we have to deal with in order to be successful in a partnership and collaboration to move the Stepping Up initiative to a execution. Here's the, even drilling down further, here's what it looks like. And this is what's really important as you think about Susie Gonzalez's presentation on community correction and the transitional housing that she is involved in. There are, I found the three-legged stool theory the best way to explain this. If you look at jail entry transition, that's the leg that we have in place right now with the community corrections. One leg is in place, and it's very, very critical. Other counties that make this step begin to move forward and attack the other two. Jail diversion protocol is huge, and this is where Linn County is leading and helped us out a lot, and we have some tri-county resources that we can focus on this. So that is a stool leg that we don't have right now. We're very weak in the context of jail diversion protocol, but we're moving in the right direction. The most challenging piece of this project is the community treatment continuum. And we talk about that all the time, but we have a very weak community treatment infrastructure in Lincoln County. It's going to take about 6 to 18 months to get that in place. And what we're really seeing with this process is that we won't have a complete program in the context of Stepping Up until we have all three stools working together and fine-tuned on an ongoing basis, and it's a strategic execution challenge, a strategic management problem. This is where we don't have the capacity in Lincoln County, which we're building. So this is what it looks like. When you were talking to Susie Gonzalez, we were talking about execution and sustainability, and that's exactly where we are right now with the Stepping Up initiative. There's two points here that I want to make. Capacity building is something we control. We have to earn our way in terms of funding. There's diversified funding opportunities in the mix that is, if we're ready, if, for example, we won the Gaines Center sequential intercept map workshop that's coming up on August 29th and 30th because we were ready. It was a strategic initiative that the sheriff helped us develop, and we were one of seven counties that won that opportunity, a technical assistance. So these are the things that we have to do with a lot of discipline in the future. And I won't read all of them to you, but you have a sense that we have to create value. And we have to launch into a community building mode that's going to help us get there in the long run. So that's really the snapshot of where we are right now. And I think we're in excellent position to move forward on this to the next phase.
Okay. Casey? So, to take a step back, again, remind people exactly what Stepping Up is, a collaborative effort of three national organizations to reduce the number of people with mental illness in the justice system. Why is that important? We see a lot of people who are going in for relatively low-level crimes, and that makes it more difficult. I think the sheriff will agree to hold people really who do need to be held in jail because they do pose a danger to others. And one of the reasons why it's particularly bad with people with mental illness is they tend to get stuck in the system and cycle through over and over the old revolving door. Again, Franklin County, Ohio, Columbus, the big city there, where I just was last week, an assistant to one of their commissioners says the average person arrested for armed robbery in Franklin County, they're in jail for 7 days before they're bailed out pre-trial. Somebody arrested for public urination, their stay averages 73 days. So hopefully that gives you a clue to this problem. So it's costing us money, and yet the outcomes are poor. So, stepping up, what's it about? Basically, a new collaborative effort. The justice and health systems are in the lead, but really it is a community partnership. We have to get other health providers in the community, public, private, for-profit, nonprofits, foundations. We want to generate new resources, but first, we've got to prove that we can use the resources that we already have differently, more efficiently. And then, when we start to show better outcomes, then we can make a case for new resources. So, what's happening nationally? It's a little more than 2 years since NACO launched the Stepping Up initiative. The first step is asking every county in the United States to adopt a resolution of participation. That's what we did last fall. In that three-year period, 377 counties, representing about 40% of the U.S. population, have signed on. So far here in Lincoln County, 16 counties. Steve mentioned the SIM mapping, that sequential intercept mapping, and that is basically coming up. We get about 40 to 50 people in a room for a day and a half, and we are going to be working through looking at the five key points where people with mental illness can interact with the justice system. At each of those points, we identify what resources we have in place now, where the gaps are, what the best strategy is to fill the gaps. And I think this is a tribute to the groundwork that we've laid every year. The Gaines Center, which is part of the federal SAMHSA, Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration, they put out a competitive call where they will come to a few communities each year and provide all the facilitation and logistical support to take a community through the SIM mapping. This year, they had 7 slots available. 54 communities across the country applied. Lincoln County was one of only 7 out of the 54 to be selected. So, again, too small to read off the screen, but you've got copies here. Kind of looks like a typical process map or lean exercise map, that this is the way we map it, another way of looking at it. And really, even though Sequential Intercept, which is a national model, it identifies 5 system intercepts within the justice and health systems, there's really a 5th intercept that people are talking about now, Intercept 0, and this slide talks about really building a robust system in the community, you know, not only community services, the emergency room, to make sure that everybody is really working together toward the common goal of getting people into treatment at the earliest possible point, avoiding, you know, the criminal activity entirely if possible. And again, as we talked about last fall when we adopted this resolution, We've already got pieces in place or in the works, including the introduction of mental health first aid training, which I believe everybody in the sheriff's office and community corrections has been through, crisis intervention training, which is a considerable step up from that, actually teaching people. You know, mental health first aid is a day-long training. Crisis intervention training is a week-long training, which actually gives people tools in the field to de-escalate mental health crises.
Commissioner Hall, if I can ask a question. Who's being trained in the mental health first aid and crisis? Sheriff?
The mental health first aid, we had all of our employees go through that. And I know community
just sheriff's office employees?
Actually, anyone in the community can actually attend. We attended one that was specific for law enforcement, just a little different version of the program that we did. But there's actually programs when anyone in the community can actually attend.
Yeah, and our public health department is filling one of the niches for providing training to organizations like, basically to institutional organization folks, like they've done it for the local DHS office, I believe for the My Sister's Place staff, and then Samaritan Health has really stepped up and it's expanding.
So it's broader
its offering, for the broader community.
Which I think is critical.
The crisis intervention training is specific to people that are responding, law enforcement that are responding. We're actually having a class this fall that we're going to be putting on here for that too.
Okay. It's all part of the trauma-informed care culture.
And, you know, we've already had mental health court and drug court in place for several years. We're launching the mobile mental health crisis services this year in the process of staffing up for that. And, of course, transitional housing we just talked about. But, as Steve said, this is a different way of saying the same thing. You know, we've got a lot of needs yet to be met. You know, the transitional housing. Great, but ideally there's going to be some folks who will really be in need of long-term supportive housing. Treatment capacity is a problem not unique to Lincoln County by any means. You know, as we heard, I think when we did the mental health, remember when we did Mental Health Awareness Month a few months ago and we had this room filled with a good part of our local staff, the question I asked Gerald Connell, as large as that grouping was, if we had enough staff really to meet the community needs, how much bigger would it be? And she said, probably twice as large. Service coordination, you know, that's essentially what the SIM exercise is all about. Or put another way, demolishing the silos, making sure we're all really on the same page, communicating with each other, working toward the common goal. One reason, you know, in addition to the local impacts, just another incentive for trying to move forward on this, that is the relatively new Oregon State Hospital, which replaced the old hospital. Steve and I, a few weeks ago, got to tour that together, and it is a beautiful facility, and talk about a model of having coordinated services under one roof, but just one typical way where it's going to help us if we do this right and we achieve these goals. Right now, somebody is arrested and put in our jail for accusation of a crime. Their attorney files a motion saying, I believe this person is mentally ill and is not competent to aid and assist in their own defense. The judge grants an evaluation, they get a mental health evaluation saying yes, that's the case, then they have to be sent over to the state hospital for treatment and stabilization. Average stay for an aid and assist client, 74 days at a cost of $1,000 a day. I was at a forum last year with Lynn Saxton, the head of Oregon Health Authority, which operates the hospital, and she said, you know, you could house somebody in the community and provide them with treatment for the entire year for a lot less cost. But we're pretty audacious with this. We've got goals even beyond the very great goals of stepping up. You know, we'd love to see a day when there is improved access to services for everybody, not just people having to essentially get involved with the justice system. To reduce stigma for everybody dealing with mental illness, trauma, and addiction. to do a better job of prevention and really ultimately to achieve a world where everybody can enjoy life and contribute to the community to the best of their potential. So I've used a different version of this presentation in other places. People often ask, well, what can I do? You know, and I say, certainly everybody can educate themselves about the problem, engage with others in the community, let people like us, our state legislators, our people in Congress know the importance of this, and then look for ways to support community organizations that are doing the work. So, you know, there it is again, the whole, everything that we're working for, jail diversion, jail reentry and transition, a full, more robust community treatment continuum, a strong foundation of collaborations and partnerships, building empathy, building compassion, and building a true trauma-informed culture. So, there you are. Any questions, gentlemen?
What's the next step?
The sequential intercept mapping exercise, and that's one thing I mentioned to the sheriff. Hopefully, maybe he can talk a little bit about what that is going to be, what his hopes for the outcome of that are, and just any other reflections he has on the last year we've been working on this.
Good morning. Curtis Landers, Lincoln County Sheriff. I'm just really excited to work with Steve and Commissioner Hall on this project and others that are contributing. Over the year, I've seen a lot of progress, and I see a lot more progress that is yet to come, including the sequential intercept mapping. I want to say personally, I want to, and I don't know if I mentioned it to you before, but this problem didn't happen overnight. I think you've heard our statistics talk about that at any given time, we probably have 30% of our inmate population in the jail here has some sort of mental illness, and that's not even considering the individuals with addiction problems, which is just a huge number that's being incarcerated where we could use those beds for other people. But that didn't happen overnight. As the state system, the number of beds reduced over the years, that increased the pressure on the local communities to house those individuals, and I don't think I took accountability early on. I think I kept blaming the state system and that the state needed to provide this resource, and now I realize that we need to provide it here on a local level, and we need to address the problems locally. So I'm glad that we're doing this, and I'm glad that Commissioner Hall approached me a year ago about the Stepping Up initiative to do this, because it was on my mind, but I didn't even realize that this was out there at the time. So thank you to him. Next steps are coming up this month, the sequential intercept mapping, and I think that is going to be very beneficial because it's going to bring all the stakeholders together in one room to identify what they do, because each one of us has our own individual problems and gaps in what we're providing. We know what we do in our system, and we have our complaints and criticisms about others and what's going on. They probably have the same thing about us. Getting us all in the room, identifying those gaps so that we can address them and move forward, I think is what I addressed even early on is a priority that we need to do. We need to see where we are locally so that we can address those concerns and move on. The three of us had the opportunity to visit Clackamas County, who did the sequential intercept mapping, I believe it was 5 or more years ago, and the outcomes that they achieved out of those was tremendous. They accomplished so much from their initial sequential intercept mapping that they're actually ready to do another one to see where they are at this point. So I think we're going to learn a lot when we come out of this. Some things that were hit on that just have come up recently. The jail diversion, pretrial diversion, I had the opportunity with myself, Judge Bockhart, DA Michelle Branham, Defense Attorney Guy Greco, and Director Susie Gonzalez attended a pretrial diversionary workshop that was put on by the National Institute of Corrections. I believe we're one of 7 counties that were able to participate in this in Oregon. And I tell you, and I don't have time to go in everything here, but basically I'll give you the 3 M's that come out of that. It's maximizing public safety, which is our number one concern. It's maximizing court appearances, which is the judge's concern. They want to make sure some people showing up for court. And it's maximizing our releases, releasing the right people and holding the right people in custody. And I'll just kind of leave it at that with what we learned, and we can talk later, maybe another presentation on that as we move forward with maybe more of the group that attended that. But I guess the what I really want to bring up is that all of us came back, and Judge Bockhart actually said, we need to set another date. We have another meeting date set this month to address what we need to do and identify a strategic plan to move forward with that progress. But again, again, it all ties together with this. This is about specifically stepping up is about mental illness, but there's a whole large problem that we're addressing. As you can tell, I'm excited to move forward and see what we can do for our county.
Good program. I just had one last comment. Just as a business professional, spent many, many years in both the private and public service sectors, this is completely within our realm to make happen. We own it, just like that slide. And I have not seen anything except ourselves that would keep us from making this happen. And that's very, very right from my heart. I've looked at this thing for a year, and there's nothing in our way except ourselves.
Okay.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you. Look forward to hearing more.
Okay, commissioner's reports.
I'll pass. I've had enough right now.
Well, I'll report that I had the opportunity to speak at the PANWAR, which is a Pacific Northwest Economic Region conference last week. It was also combined with the Coastal Caucus. Had an opportunity to speak about some of the successes and challenges that we're experiencing here in Lincoln County. Also had an opportunity to talk about the maritime sector, which we continue to develop. And also, for those that might be interested, the Cascade West Area Commission on Transportation is meeting tonight in Toledo. Normally we meet in Albany, but we will be meeting in Toledo tonight and discussing aspects of transportation.
Okay. I'll mention I was at the PANWAR conference too, in the Coastal Economic Summit, but one of the things that I attended was the invasive species in Montana. 20 years ago, I worked on the invasive species, two species of mussel, the Kellogg mussel and the zebra mussel. And at that time, it was down in the Missouri River, and I said it would move up and get into the western states, and eventually, when it got to the Columbia River, we would have a major biological disaster. Well, after talking to Montana people, I admire what they did. They actually completely ran their emergency service program when it got into two of their lakes. Now, that doesn't sound like too bad, but one of the other lakes that was exposed that apparently didn't take was only 85 miles from the Columbia River.
Oh, boy.
And I don't know if the average person understands what the consequences is, but I'll take a second to explain it in my opinion. This mussel grows very prolific and very fast, and it can completely plug pipes where you take water intakes. When I say water intakes, on the dams, you have all these water intakes that go into your turbines. If and when it gets, and hopefully that Montana has done a fabulous job of trying to set a line in the sand, but if it does get into the Columbia River, they'll have to probably remove those water intake screens and also the screening that we do for all of our diversions in other waterways, but the big ones are going to be in the dams. If they do that, that means that salmon will go down through the turbines and kill off major runs of the salmon, and then we're going to be facing the Endangered Species Act. I don't know what the consequences would be, but if you look at the worst consequences would be the Endangered Species Act would kick in and shut down hydropower in the West. Now that's the worst case scenario. I'm just trying to scare you to say, guys, you better pay attention to this at every state in the way. It won't happen overnight, but if I look down the road 20 years from now, it's possible we'll be looking at these kinds of scenarios. The only thing that can stop it is to have good inspections on boats, because this is usually transferred from lake to lake and river to river by simply not washing the bottom of your boats. Montana's gone to the point where they have mandatory cleaning stations and they have a lot of manpower. They spent $13 million trying to prevent it in their state, but everybody's trying to look at what's going to happen in the West when they get to the dams. And so I hope our legislature's well aware. PANWAR, I didn't realize that it moved so far until we went in and had the discussion with Montana. And they won a special award for what they've done. And I just don't think that people in Oregon understand the consequences of this. So I'm going to take a second to explain and say, boy, you want to pay attention to this, because we have a lot to lose here in the West.
Okay.
Okay. Hasn't that been an issue in the St. Lawrence Seaway out of the Great Lakes?
Oh, they spend millions, literally millions and millions of dollars in the Great Lakes with all the industry water intakes. But, you know, it's bad, and it's money that has to be calculated into business costs to do this kind of cleaning. But I don't know how you do it. And there may be a way, but so far, to my knowledge, there's no way to eradicate it. And there's no way to prevent it in something like a screen on front of a turbine.
And preventive action is what we need.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's the best way, is you got to fight it. With so many invasive species, it's just not this. On land, we do it, but we need to be really careful of this one. It could have huge consequences to us. And by encouraging the other states to take an action is the best way we can prevent it from getting here.
Okay.
Good.
Thanks. Okay, next meeting.
Constituent input.
I see no constituents, not unless you'd like to talk. Press is shaking his head no.
For the record, we gave the opportunity.
Yeah, but given the opportunity sometimes to an empty room seems a little ridiculous to me.
But it gets it on the record. We did.
Not empty.
Okay. No, it's not empty, but it's our staff sitting there.
Just us.
Just us.
Just the staff.
And
the media.
The next meeting is August 9th at 9:30 here at the Board of Commissioners room at the Lincoln County Courthouse. With that, I'll adjourn the meeting.